It is Locked On Jazz for the 14th of September. Eric Woodyard's summer interview series continues for its final day. We go back to some of the questions from yesterday on Andre Kirilenko, on George Niang, Mike Conley, as well as Rudy Gobert. All of those coming up on the show, plus a debut of a new segment called DNA, or at least maybe. It's all coming up next on Locked On Jazz. Pow! You're getting rid of that if you have a chance. That would be the first thing you get rid of. This is coming to you from a hotel room on the road for my daughter has a golf tournament. So we're on the road today. And the segment that is going to debut today is DNA, like the, you know, DNA. Like she's my 13-year-old daughter is going to make her debut in DNA. Because she has some thoughts on the SI Top 100 list and Rudy Gobert that she wants to get out there. So we'll get to that in a second. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, and geeky numbers about the Jazz. You can get it on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and you can tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On Jazz. Thanks for the live show yesterday. It was great. Really appreciate how many people have watched it. Want to welcome into the Locked On Jazz Facebook group, Jonathan McGarry, thank you very much. D. Smith, he's from Ogden, no surprise there. Jackson Frame works at the Great Roan Apparel. Matthew Aldev over at Primary Children's Hospital, thanks for working with the kids. Alan Choi, Derek Glum, glad to have you involved as well. Shane Michael out in Pennsylvania. Troy Cushing, thank you very much for joining the Locked On Jazz Facebook group. Jonathan Krause, Brandon Hill, Clint Sitbor, I believe that's right, over at Intermountain Healthcare. Lance Pear, Tubb Sampson, Eric Fredrickson, Becca McFarland, we got our woman in there, Corey Roberts, Samuel Peterson, Colin Fry, Sal Malina, and Brandon Starks. Thank you very much all for joining the Locked On Jazz Facebook group. All right, I got a bunch of topics we'll get to. Eric Woodard, Woodyard is going to join us for his final part of the summer interview series. He's been great. Yesterday's show, why Rudy Gobert should be top 10, not 13th. And this brings us to our new segment of the show. He's 14th. I was wrong. He should be at least 13th. She corrected me again. All right. She has a take on this. Very sophisticated. I'm handing the headset and putting on her. There's not a lot of back and forth here in the first edition of DNA.
You can even say hi. Hello.
All right. So what's your take?
So I personally think that Rudy Gobert does deserve to be in the top 10, but I think it's very difficult for him to make it that high because he's a defensive player. Because if you have a really, really bad offensive team with a good defensive team, it's still really hard to compensate for that bad offense. Whereas if you have a really good offense and a bad defense, it's much easier to compensate.
And thus, the 13-year-old girl does not agree with Dad. The first episode of DNA, right there. There'll be more. All right. I don't know if I agree with this. My premise, she might be right. Coaches agree with her. In fact, yeah, coaches definitely agree with her. I still think the value of being elite defensively is the same as being the value of being elite offensively. One of the questions would be, is being terrible defensively less bad than being terrible offensively? That's a research project that maybe will have to be done. So we crunch the numbers, by the way, on PAC this weekend and figure out who and figure out our rating system for next week for the listeners. All right, we'll do it together. And then you can tell where you think the numbers are silly. All right, let's get to the it's the live hotel room show. Yeah, Rudy Gobert is 14th, not 13th. All right, let's get to some of the things. I thought there was an interesting little post by somebody McMurray on Locked On Jazz Facebook group that feels as though I do not have an appropriate appreciation for Andre Kirilenko. I don't know if that's true. Andre's son and my son went to school together for a while, so there might have been a level where I was trying not to play favorites in my analysis. And now he actually, of all things, they moved to L.A. and he goes to school with my nephew. So there might have been that. I would also say I just thought we misused him the entire time. Like, he was... The day we signed Carlos Boozer, I think we should have traded Andre Kirilenko, not signed him to a max contract, because he was a four in a stretched-out league, not a three. And particularly with, you know, he survived because we had Memo and Boozer, both who could play a little outside, and particularly Memo could play at the five. But Karolinko's brilliance all comes from when he's playing the power forward, and then he's able to block shots and do all these other things. And when we moved him back out to the three, that same level of brilliance just did not hold. I mean, you can look at the numbers. It's dramatically different. The other thing I think that is worth commenting on that, and I don't mean this critically to Andre, is, you know, we didn't win a lot of games the year in which he's at his best. Right. So when he's the premise of your team and he's having this incredible year, averaging 17 points and 8 rebounds and 3 assists and 3 blocks and doing, you know, what was some pretty remarkable stuff in the 2003-2004 season, my memory is, you know, we don't win a lot of games. And so the other side of this that you probably could look at with the Utah Jazz and, you know, we went, I think, 42-36 that year or something when he played, is whether or not how much you were actually going to win if he was your primary guy. But if you go look at, you know, his, once he starts slide, as he gets older and starts playing at the smaller forward position in 25, 26, 27, you know, all the blocks and some of the other stuff goes away. The 04-05 season, when he plays a tremendous, you know, he only plays 37 games, and we're 15-26 when he plays. So there's a little bit of a level that when he was at his best playing the power forward, we also weren't winning. Hard to tell what those two levels were, but certainly, and as the game has evolved, you know, he was really probably a power forward, one of the first stretch power forwards that we had in the league. So I would disagree that. I mean, I think he was pretty fabulous, and I think the Swiss Army knife aspect of him was before his time. What he could do now is a four at 6'9", with a pretty good rebounding ability and good rebounding percentages and ability to pass the basketball and defensively and move things would be pretty awesome. The injuries got in the way too, right? I mean, 67, 58, 64 games, and then seems to have lost a zest for the game on the backside. You know, I write down everyone's names, and then I can't read my own writing. I might as well become a doctor. Shade Scott wanted to know about Mike Conley and whether we'd be interested in him. I mean, a little bit of that depends on where you are with Ricky. Conley's getting paid an awful lot. I do think that both Mike Conley and Marc Gasol get moved out of Memphis this year. I think this is the breaking point year where those guys come back, and if they're healthy and they're playing well, they make the move, and those guys get shifted. So it's a worthwhile discussion, and one that I think most front offices will have. I'm not one who thinks Conley's greatly overrated or underrated like everybody else. I think he's a borderline all-star, not quite an all-star, and that's probably the right aspect to him. It might be Mark Green asked about George Niang and whether he'll be like Jonas Jerebko. You know, I think with Tabo and Jay Crowder both being healthy to start the year, it's the first time the two of them have been healthy at the same time. They'll grab the majority of those minutes. I suspect, though, George Niang will have a very good preseason. We only play 5 games, so it's hard for the guys that aren't in the rotation to get time. But I would suspect he'll get time. Tabo still coming back from the knee injury and trying to get healthy. I don't know how much he'll play in the preseason. And so he feels pretty good. I've talked to him a ton. But I think Niang's a guy who really could, almost the way Royce O'Neal did last year, force his way on the floor. That would be a little bit of my thought of last year at the U. When we were down at the U, I was talking to Chris Jones, Utah assistant, and Chris Jones was saying to me, like, this kid Royce O'Neal's really good. He's going to play. He's going to get on the court, all those kind of things. And that was kind of my insight to that. I feel the same things kind of going on with George Niang right now, that he's playing really well. He's very versatile. He does a lot of things well. He doesn't do anything exceptionally, and that he may work his way onto the floor in that fashion. And Justin Iyer wanted to know about Rudy Gobert's training. All reports are actually great. In fact, the comments have exactly been that even after winning Defensive Player of the Year, would he be, you know, sitting pretty and decide to go sit on the French Riviera and show his abs off, or would he go work? And he's worked, and everyone's very, very pleased about that. Chris White also pointed out yesterday on the show about screen assists in the conversation about whether Rudy Gobert is a top 10 player. He's number 2 in the league in screen assists, and that has to have some value. Yeah, take that, DNA. Screen assists. You know, I think right now would be the time to like debut the DNA podcast because she's 13. She's not going to agree with me on anything I say no matter what. I could tell her like Donovan Mitchell's nickname is Spida and she would tell me that that's wrong because she's a 13-year-old girl. Be a great podcast. DNA coming. I don't know. We'll see. Probably not a lot. Maybe she should finish eighth grade before she starts her media career. Eric Woodyard is coming up next on the summer interview series. Special thanks to him this week. We're trying to get our final one next week. As I mentioned, the goal, though I haven't lined it up yet, is with Andy Larson of the Salt Lake Tribune. I saw that Tony Jones had a little announcement that he is leaving the Trib. So congratulations to Tony for the next step in his life. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street. We've driven... Now, if DNA could do ads, that'd be really impressive. We've driven all the Hyundai models over the last year to try to get to know the brand. And I've told the story before. I think it actually dates me a little bit. As a 48-year-old, you know, the Hyundai brand first came out, and it wasn't something that you really thought of. And when I first sat down with the Murdochs and Adam Chase and got to know the Murdoch family, I was super impressed with their passion toward their craft of running a dealership. And we've seen that with 92 years of commitment in Utah. And then what's Hyundai? And they tried to explain it to me. And then when we started driving them, obviously I was wildly impressed with the amount you get for the money, how smooth it drives, how all the features, how nice they look, how well they handle, and to the point which we've now bought a Santa Fe. So I think that sums up my feelings on that. It's all over at 4646 South State Street. You can see Blake. He's down in Linden a lot now, so feel free and say hi to Blake out there. The Murdoch guarantee is car washes for life as well as safety inspections for life, price match guarantee, and you get the Hyundai Assurance 100,000-mile warranty as well. Summer interview series, Eric Woodyard with us. Day three with Eric. Make sure you catch last week. We talked about his life story. Yesterday we talked a lot of Donovan and things of that nature. And today we'll talk the league and the Jazz defense. So everybody wants to know, do you see the Bad Boys Pistons in the Utah Jazz?
Man, a little bit. I see a little bit of that. I see a little bit of those old Bird Celtics teams because they're going to really irritate you, man. Like, I don't know why, but Ricky Rubio really gets under a lot of point guard skin, as you saw. With Russell Westbrook, you know, and then now you got Grayson Allen, you only adding to that. And I think, like, this city, you know, I think it kind of reminds me of, like, I wasn't, you know, alive, but, you know, watching a lot of those old, you know, Bad Boys and watching a lot of those old Boston Celtics games, you know, I can see a little bit of both of them with that, you know, as well, man. So, yeah, because this team is just down and dirty, man. They defense is, you know, a very defensive-minded team. They got the different personalities and characters. I would like to see some of these guys in this market get some cool nicknames. I think that'll just take it to the next level. Because that's what we had in the 80s, you know, the Bad Boys and with those Celtics teams, all those fun nicknames. So that would just make it complete.
Well, you're the writer. Get to work. I'll just follow your lead, man. You come up with them, I'll start talking about them on the air. We'll be good. That's all you got to do.
I will keep that in mind, man, for sure.
All right, you play a little hoop, but just imagine, let's say, we'll go to your Flint, Michigan, your Kyle Kuzma, your whomever. What do we got? Your Sacramento opening night of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a single guy on the Jazz roster who you want to be guarded by?
No, not me, man. I mean, I'm not an NBA, so.
Right, but I mean, like, Joe Ingles is grabbing and holding and touching. Like, NBA players hate being touched. Joe knows it. He's just going to touch him the whole time. I'm just going to keep touching you. They hate it.
You know how to get under your skin, too, man. You talk a lot of trash, so.
Like, you don't want to be guarded by Tabo's just great if he's still got it at 33. You don't want to be guarded by Jay Crowder. He's bumping you the whole time. You don't want to be. I mean, I maybe the only guy you want to be guarded on is Faves on a switch, but, like, even that I don't really want to deal with if he's moving well.
Yeah, defensively, man, definitely by far one of the best teams in the NBA as far as defensively, so. I mean, not really, man. I mean, and they got the, like I said, the personality to get under your skin, not only just to play defense on you, but they're talking trash to you, they bump you, and like I say, bringing Grayson Allen to the mix, man, is only going to make it that much more tougher, you know, just for teams and just to get frustrated as well, too. Like, they have a really frustrating team to play against.
Do you think Grayson's going to get time?
I think he will. I think he'll find a way to play, man. He's a player. I mean, like, coming from that Duke system, Coach K, I think he'll find ways to make impacts on the floor. I mean, he could play. I think what impressed me a lot was his rebounding this summer. And as well, I didn't know he was as good a ball handler as he was. And I watched him at Duke a lot, but, you know, seeing him play the point and seeing him facilitate, you know, he's a lot better. at doing those things than what I thought. And like I said, the rebound aspect, he can jump high. He doesn't look like it. You look at him, you look like a little choir boy, but dude has bounce, man. He has hops. I talked to Donovan and his dunk coach, Chuck Milan, and he was saying that he thinks Grayson Allen is a better dunk contest dunker than Donovan. So that's a lot, saying a lot, coming from Chuck Milan, who's worked with all these dunk contest winners. I mean, so, yeah, he's sneaky, athletic, can rebound the ball, is bigger than what you imagine. And, yeah, I think he'll find minutes, sure.
You know, the 40-inch vertical jump is a big deal. I think that's going to be the story on Grayson is – does the athleticism show? The last 2 years at Duke, it didn't, but Marvin Bagley and Wendell Carter were in the middle of the lane, and the year before it was, I can't remember, but it's another two bigs, right? He didn't play a game where there was any space on the floor since his sophomore year, and the early word on pickup, but that's a space game, is that athleticism is showing. So I'm curious, if his athleticism is able to come out, then I'm with you. I think Dante and Alec are sitting there fighting, trying to get minutes from him.
Right. Yeah, it's crazy, man, because, I mean, this team is so loaded. I mean, especially with the system that they're playing, and all these guys know how to play their roles, you know. So it's going to be crazy to see what Coach Snyder comes up with, what lineup, you know, and I know he's going to tweak things based on, you know, different teams. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch who gets time and what happens, because they're so loaded at so many different positions, man. So I'm interested to see what happens this year as well with that, too.
What are the storylines that you're most kind of think are most interesting to this team early on?
I think health, number one. I mean, last year, you know, beginning of the year, you know, they couldn't stay healthy. So, I mean, they were just as talented earlier in the year, but, I mean, they weren't healthy. So that's number one. Seeing how Donovan comes back year two. Does he have a sophomore slump? Does he pick up where he left off and get even better? Obviously, who gets those minutes? What Dante Exum does this year is going to be big after getting that. You know, a lot of people felt that was a lot of money to give him, you know, especially coming off those injuries. So seeing how he responds is going to be great. Jay Crowder gets a whole year of training camp. So it's so many different storylines, man. Rudy Gobert coming back after his Defensive Player of the Year campaign. And seeing, can he have a better year than last year? Will he become an all-star this year? It's just so many things with this team, man, and they're in the national spotlight. So how do they respond to that? So it's so many things.
One more before we talk NBA as a whole. Quinn Snyder, day in and day out, what's your impressions on him?
Man, Quinn is straightforward. I learn something from him every time I talk to him in the huddle. It's like he's just a basketball scientist, a basketball madman. And like I said, he's so knowledgeable about the game, and he's always the same. He's never too up, never too down. And I think that passes down to the team because they kind of take on his personality traits. So I think, he's a great coach, man. And obviously, he was, you know, recognized last year being the runner-up for Coach of the Year.
How Eric sees the entire Western Conference when we come back on Locked on Jazz. More coming with Eric. Really appreciate him. Feel free to hit him on Twitter and say thank you for joining the show. It was great. And if you didn't hear Eric's Friday edition of last week, in which he kind of broke down his life story, that's definitely worth going back to hear. If you're a small business owner and you have not gone to MizumaUSA.com, you're costing yourself money. Small business, 1 to 5 employees, you're working this thing out. The last thing you want to be doing is all your bookkeeping and your tax accounting services. They're a pain. So what Mizuma does is they assign you to a specific person, and that person will be your CPA, and then another person is your tax person. And for $75 a month, you have your whole entire finance department. Pretty amazing. And that's what Mizuma USA does for you. There is no you can cancel at any time. There's no hooks on the whole deal. It's a Utah company. I think you'll be super, super impressed. Give them a call, 801-980-2102. That's 801-980-2102. And mention the promo code LOCKED to get a discount. $75 a month to start, and you get all of your bookkeeping done for you. Unlimited consultation from a CPA. Tax suggestions every quarter and reports every month. That's MizumaUSA.com. The Lakers are the obvious choice. Who else got better, Eric?
Man, it remains to be seen about Houston. That Trevor Ariza loss was huge, but What Carmelo Anthony are we going to see this year? I mean, a lot of people think he's finished. I personally don't. I just think, you know, if he buys into the system and understand, I'm not the same Melo that I was, you know, 5 or 6 years ago. And I think Chris Paul will make him a better player. So that remains to be seen about Houston. But like you said, obviously the Lakers, the Jazz, obviously. Going down the line, who else? Maybe the Grizzlies might be a little better. I mean, they're not going to be like a serious contender, but, you know, being a little more healthier than they were last year, bringing in, you know, obviously Jaren Jackson, a nice draft pick. There's so many storylines in the West, man. The West is always so competitive, you know, and it's one of the tougher conferences. Seeing how Paul George and Oklahoma City bounced back from taking that loss to the Jazz last year, and will they play better after having more chemistry? It seemed like Paul George and Russell Westbrook, you know, are a lot closer. You know, I know you're not the biggest Westbrook fan, but, you know, I think he's a – I think he's going to play a lot better this year with Paul George. I think they learned something probably from playing the Jazz last year that they're going to have to, you know, really step their game up this year.
I just don't like inefficiency, and I just thought he was terribly inefficient last year. Like, definitely. I mean, I'm not going to – like, let's be honest. He had a bad year last year. Nobody wants to talk about it. Like, it's like this unspoken thing you're not allowed to talk about. He had a bad year last year.
He struggled versus the Jazz in that playoff series, man. He had a couple good games, you know, we saw. But I really think, man, it's they have to – they need more time to play together and learn each other. I think he'll play a lot better this year. I think he'll have a better season.
And by the way, if I was Paul George and had that opening game and nobody talked about, or that game six and nobody ever talked about, I'd re-sign with Oklahoma City too.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he was in a position where, I mean, they paying him a lot of money to come back, and you know, I think it shocked a lot of people, but it made sense.
When you look at the one team, I want your thought on. I am the only person who likes this. I haven't run my numbers yet, and I'm never comfortable until I run my numbers. I actually like what New Orleans has done. I like them getting rid of DeMarcus. I like Mirotić. I actually like Elfrid Payton. I like Julius Randle. Like, I like what they've done. I think they're going to be the surprise team in the Western Conference.
Yeah, I think they can make some noise for sure. It's just like, we know who the best teams are, so it's kind of tough, like, to – I mean, not to, like, discredit anybody, but we know the top team is Golden State. We know Houston. We know the Lakers. And we know the Jazz are in the mix, Oklahoma City. So it's like, yeah, I think New Orleans did some great moves, but will they be better than the top-tier teams? I'm not sure. You know, I think they'll still be around in that same, you know, seventh or eighth spot, you know, Portland as well. You know, so, yeah, I think I like the moves that they made, but, like, I don't think they'll be a serious contender in no time soon.
Fair point. So, all right, so the Warriors are tier one. Most of the numbers projections have tier two as Jazz, Rockets, and Lakers, according to Vegas. Do you buy that? Do you buy that those?
Yeah, I buy that.
And you think, and you put LeBron and the Lakers in that mix?
You have to, man. LeBron is still the best player in the world, in my opinion. Any team he goes to automatically gets better, man. I think, you know, we'll definitely see that again in Los Angeles. I think coming off the year he had last year was arguably one of his best seasons, you know, and he's feeling good. He still has young, fresh legs, man. He's still looking good. So until I see any slip, you know, I can't really go against a team that LeBron James is on. You know, I think he'll make everybody around him better.
Kevin Pelton of ESPN made an interesting comment on one of our previous podcasts in regards to that. He said, I got that everybody says that you can't be a 45-win team with LeBron, except for the fact that Cleveland basically was last year, and this team's not as good as Cleveland.
You think this team, this Laker team, not as good as last year Cleveland team?
Yeah.
No, I don't. That last year Cleveland team, I think this Laker team will be better. I think they will. I think, especially with the coming back now, you got another year with Lonzo, you got Rondo. They're helping him become a better point guard, and, you know, LeBron as well. You know, you got Kuz, you got Brandon Ingram. He got some better pieces around him, and I think, I think this Laker team is better. I haven't seen them play all together yet, but just me personally, I feel like this year's Laker team is better than that Cleveland team last year. I wasn't a big fan of that team last year at all.
I'm not buying the Rondo helps Lonzo storyline. I don't buy that.
I think
that.
He will. I think he's in the later stage of his career.
Let me point that out. I generally don't buy that. I think veteran leadership's the biggest BS in the league. Like, because I've seen it in person where the veteran leadership actually is really telling the player, do what's good for you. Like the idea right. that the veteran leadership, and it's good veteran leadership, frankly. Like it might be actually good, like that might be exactly the truth. Like take care of you. You got a short career, you got to worry. But the idea that the veteran leadership is going to be helped by that the veteran leadership is going to have be team-centric, I think is garbage. It might be player-centric. I'm going to help this young guy have a great career, but I don't think it's team-centric very often.
I think it depends on what team. Because, I mean, sometimes you see a lot of young teams who don't have that, and you see that kind of translate on the court. I mean, like, if you look at a guy like, okay, now let's say the Jazz, like, say with Donovan, had he not had a Thabo Sefolosha or a Ricky Rubio that was kind of helping him become that, would he be the same player? I mean, we don't know that. So I think it kind of just depends on the team. I mean, like, because veterans can play a role in a player's development and a team's development. If you have somebody that's cool, calm, and collected in those situations, as opposed to not having it. So I think it's really a team-by-team basis, and what type of veteran leadership is it? Is it positive veteran leadership, or is it, hey, you got to get yours, man, it's what it is. Or if you really got a guy that's really trying to help, you know, you become better. Because like you say, you see in Sefolosha how much he helped the team last year. Even playing OKC, a lot of people didn't see behind closed doors, you know, like he was kind of helping guys and, you know, really walking them through situations at times, even though he was hurt. So I think it really depends on the team and the player and the culture of even, you know, what type of veteran is. So I think it could be either way. You know, that's my spiel on it.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's an interesting, it's one of those things that's just kind of talked about, and I've seen it go the other way.
It could be on a team by team basis, but I think in certain situations, I mean, you definitely need those veterans, man, because I mean, a lot of teams can be young and talented, like say a Minnesota who didn't have, you know, they had all this talent, but what veteran leadership were having when they was having all that talent, and they still kind of stuck in the same spot. So
right, there's a chance Jimmy Butler is not the greatest leader of a team.
No, I don't think so. I think he's more. No, I don't. I don't know Jimmy personally or nothing like that. But just from what I see and what I take in, I don't think he is.
Right. No, I mean it's interesting. You kind of look back. You know, why would Chicago trade him? And now there's, you know, that one's interesting. I've shared this story before this year. People talked to me about Chris Paul and the Clippers. It was always this story, and they denied it, said it wasn't true, and now we kind of know it was all true. And what people used to tell me about the Clippers was that Chris Paul just yelled at you so much that, you know, but as the year went on, like, they didn't practice, they didn't do stuff because guys needed a break. And then as years went on, everything was good until all of a sudden you'd start the first day of training camp, Chris Paul would yell at someone, and the guys would just be like, oh, gosh, 7 more months of this crap. And I'm interested to watch Minnesota this year because their offseason, Jimmy Butler has destroyed all of them publicly. They've all – like, Tibbs is yelling at them all the time. Like, I'm curious to see how they come out of the gate. Like, are they coming out of the gate with juice, or are they coming out of the gate of, oh, man, 7 months of this?
Right. Yeah, definitely. I mean, and we saw, like, even what Rubio was saying, you know, like, this, he felt like that was his best season last year because, like, just team camaraderie and just the togetherness. And, you know, he cited, you know, his time in Minnesota, you know, so definitely, man, I'm interested in seeing that as well because they're always a team that you expect to be good, and they kind of don't ever exceed the expectations. They haven't really took a step yet, you know, and I'm a big fan of those young players over there, but at some point, they're going to have to take that next step in their career.
Well, it'll be interesting. Rubio's an interesting one. First time Rubio's had the same coach since his second year in the NBA when he's coming off an ACL.
Man, that is. I didn't even realize that. We saw him in 1 year, what he was able to do. So I think, you know, I wasn't like a huge, huge Rubio fan, you know, when he was in Minnesota. But I saw the evolution of his game last year, and I think he'll only get better this year.
Well, there, I gave you one nugget that made it worth you spending an hour with me. So you can use that nugget somewhere and say, well, thanks, Locke. That was an hour of my time. And all I got, some people get a T-shirt. All you got was this stupid little nugget.
Man, I appreciate it anyway, man. It's always good talking to you, man. You know, you do an amazing job. Always good interacting with you, man. So, yeah, definitely. It was great talking to you.
That was fun. Great to hear your story. Best of luck in year two. Look forward to seeing you around. And didn't know we were doing dinner on October 16th for your 30th birthday in Sacramento, but it sounds like we're going to
have to do that, man. Huh? Yeah, let's do it, man. I'm excited, man. Turning 30, it's a blessing, man, to make it to this age. And I definitely don't take it for granted. And being in this position year two, I couldn't ask for a better situation right now.
Eric, a real pleasure. I think you gained a lot of fans in this interview series. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Man, no problem, man. Anytime, man.
Huge thanks to Eric. Really appreciate him taking the time with us. And if you could send him a thank you on Twitter, it would be greatly appreciated. He is such a good guy. It's E_Woodyard. E_Woodyard. And we'll come back next week with our final summer interview series, and then we'll get to player interviews as training camp will be underway. It's right around the corner. This has been Locked On Jazz. Make sure you grab Locked On NBA with Ben Golliver on the top 100 players in the NBA. And no, you cannot send messages to DNA and tell her you didn't like her takes. See ya.